Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. People recommend writing in a journal to process emotions and experiences. This feels like being too much in my head, which I thought I should be avoiding. Can you elaborate on releasing mental thought patterns through writing? And how does that integrate with staying present? Okay. It's a great question because there's so many different aspects. You know, if you come, whether it's here in satsang every night, whether you go on the internet and watch 5 or 10 or 50 spiritual talks, whether you attend a lot of lectures or classes, eventually you're going to start to hear things, it won't take very long, that start to feel like, oh wait, how am I supposed to do that and do this? And so, for example, Pujya Swamiji gives us a daily multivitamin of meditation in the morning. And of course, he gives it as times of the day, but it could be any time and all the time. So he says meditation in the morning, no reaction all day, and then introspection at night. Where do I stand? How was my day? Did I lose my temper? Did I not lose my temper? Did I move through the world as the divine being I know that I am? Or did I move through the world as my identity and my title and my body? Even there, you have three completely different mental processes. Meditation is a stilling of the mind, bringing the mind back, whether it's to the breath, whether it's to a mantra, whatever may be our object of meditation. No reaction is going to be a technique during the day, meaning respond, not react. We're not light bulbs that go on and off. Requires thinking. Because no reaction doesn't mean ignoring it. He doesn't say meditate in the morning, ignore everything that happens all day long, and then introspect on it in the night. It's not ignoring. You're there, but you're not reacting to it. And then introspection in the night, at which point we think. So, yes, we're supposed to stay present. But staying present does not mean that I don't take advantage of the powers of contemplation and introspection that I have. It simply means I know when they have a place and when they don't. So, for example, meditation is very different from contemplation. Meditation is very different from introspection. Meditation is very different from writing in a journal. So in meditation, our goal is still the mind. A thought comes. Pretty much regardless of what form of meditation you do, it's going to be some type of technique to free yourself of that thought as gently and peacefully and quickly as possible and bring yourself back, whether back to the breath, back to the mantra, back to what you're being aware of, back to the prayer you're chanting, whatever it may be. So if you have a thought, let's say, a thought comes while you're meditating of anger, you're not going to analyze it. You're not going to go back over what was it that made you angry. You're going to just bring the awareness back to the breath, to the mantra. And yet, when you sit for introspection or you sit for contemplation, that's the time to say, God, you know, I was sitting in that room with 10 people. Somebody said something. Nobody else seemed bothered by it. Why did it bother me so much? Why did it bother me so much that it's coming up in my meditation? Why did it bother me so much that here I am 8 hours later thinking about it again? Or maybe it bothered me so much that at the time I lost my temper. I said something I shouldn't have said. I did something I shouldn't have done. So in introspection, we think about it. They're not the same, but they're both critical aspects of a spiritual path. You know, one of the concepts that we speak about sometimes is something called the spiritual bypass, which is a concept that I've heard explained very, very beautifully by a Buddhist meditation renowned expert from America named Jack Kornfield. And a spiritual bypass is basically having deep, beautiful, amazing spiritual experiences and assuming that because you've had them, you therefore are done and you no longer have any issues, and anybody in your life who might suggest that you had issues, clearly they have the problem. They're not as enlightened as you are. They are, you know, projecting on you. We use whatever lingo we need to use to deflect the issue off of us and onto somebody else. So I've had this great experience of God. You and I are having a fight. You say to me, you know, please don't get so angry. I say, I'm not angry. Are you projecting anger on me? That must be your anger, right? As I shout down the walls. Many of us have had the experience, I know I have, of saying to someone, you know, please calm down. I say, I am calm. What do you mean? I'm really calm. You're the problem. I'm like, okay. I share this here because this is a perfect example of what we would call a spiritual bypass. You've had a spiritual experience, beautiful, wonderful, no doubt, and you still have a psychological process that is impacting your life. One did not negate the other. And when we do a spiritual bypass, it is negating. It's basically saying, because I've had this beautiful spiritual experience, I therefore cannot possibly have anger issues. I cannot possibly have ego issues. I cannot possibly be living in any sort of illusion. So because I meditate, because I've had beautiful moments of expanded consciousness, I'm done. I'm God. And therefore, if you have any problem with me, you are the problem. This is where introspection comes in. This is where contemplation comes in. This is where journal writing comes in. It's not essential. It's not that you can't have a spiritual practice without journal writing. But what it does that's slightly different from introspection is it keeps you focused. Sometimes when you start to introspect, again, the mind wanders. You justify things. You rationalize things. Well, that wasn't really my fault. That was his fault. He provoked me. He shouldn't have said that. She shouldn't have said this. The situation was unfair. We tend to justify it. journaling, if you do it right, actually gets you out of your thinking rational mind. When they speak about the importance of journaling spiritually, it's more like a stream of consciousness. So you're not censoring, you're not rationalizing, you're not justifying, you're just writing. And a lot of times when you write, if you're doing it as a stream of consciousness, you find that insights and truths come that you don't even realize were there until you see them on your page. And I don't know the mechanism of why they come there in a way more easily than they tend to come just contemplating or just introspecting. I think it has something to do with the thinking mind that we use when we introspect. And the thinking mind always keeps us this arm's length away. And it analyzes, and it justifies, and it tries to explain. And it wants to feel good also. I mean, if I say, God, I really got triggered. I really lost myself there in anger, in pain, in ego, in jealousy, whatever it may have been. Well, that doesn't feel good inside. And most of us like to feel good inside. I mean, it's nice to feel like you're the type of person you want to be. And when you're really honest with yourself and you realize, oh, God, that was not necessary to say. I wonder what made me say that. And then you really are face to face with, oh, God, I was really in my ego right then. I was really in a reactive state right then. It doesn't feel good. And so a lot of our thinking brains are very good at censoring that. We don't even know we're censoring it. We've developed the ability to do this over the course of our lives. And so it now happens so automatically that we just automatically default to the other person. They made me angry. They triggered me. They provoked me. They hurt me. But when you journal, because you're not thinking and it's just coming, a lot of times it's on the page, as I said, before you even realize what it is. And so your thinking brain doesn't have the opportunity to censor it. So we tend to sometimes get more honest in writing than in thought. And so it's not instead of being present, it's in addition to being present. Being present doesn't mean I never think about my own actions. Being present doesn't mean, oh, did I just trip you along the way? Well, so sorry. I would say I'm sorry, except it happened 30 seconds ago and I'm now in the present. And since it's not happening in the present, I didn't do it. And so, you know, get yourself up. That's not what we mean by be in the present. Be in the present means don't spend your life reliving the past. So in this moment, I tripped you. Oh, I'm so sorry. Let me help you up. But I'm not going to carry it all day, bad person, clumsy person, useless person, worthless person, you know. That's the stuff that we say, be present. Right here, right now, in this breath, you're not tripping anybody. In this breath, you're okay. Yeah, it happened. You did what needed to be done. You're now moving more mindfully. You're moving with more awareness. Sometimes we don't have the opportunity immediately. Sometimes you don't even know you tripped somebody. You were in another world. You were thinking about something else. You were listening to music. Who knows? And you don't even realize that it happened until days or weeks or months later. Well, just because it happened then, it's up in the present. It has become part of your present, which means to be present is to be present with the fact that you now have a piece of information. Well, so you deal with it then. I'm so sorry I tripped you at that time. I was moving without awareness. I was moving without mindfulness, whatever it may be. But being in the present, again, it doesn't mean I don't plan for my future. You know, Pooja Swamiji always says, failing to plan is planning to fail. So be present doesn't mean, you know, I'm just going to blow through the universe like a leaf. It doesn't mean I don't look back on my life. This is what introspection is. We look back, all right, where have I come? How am I moving? But it's important to understand it's not meditation. And so these are all important aspects of our life. It's like, you know, you sit down and you eat a thali and you get vegetables and you get dal and you get rice and you get a chapati and, you know, people emphasize eat your vegetables. Well, yeah, you should. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't also eat dal. And it doesn't mean that you shouldn't also eat rice, because actually all of them together are an important part of the diet. And so being present in the moment is very important, but not to the exclusion of introspecting on my life or planning for tomorrow.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Join us here on the holy banks of Mother Ganga. In the lap of the towering and beautiful Himalayas, for our annual International Yoga Festival, taking place from March 1st to March 7th every year. Come join your global yoga family in a true union of yourself with your divine self. We look forward to welcoming you all. You can go to the website on www.internationalyogafestival.org. Look forward to welcoming you all home to the banks of Mother Ganga.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. Someone had asked about whether consciousness was physical. Did consciousness live in the body? And we were speaking about how, no, it didn't. It's not contingent upon the body. But our physical brain is the means through which we interact with consciousness. It's the means through which we understand consciousness. It's the means through which we expand our consciousness, that you need to utilize your physical brain to sit down and meditate. The physical brain is what chants our mantra. And as superficial as that sounds, it actually brings a whole new importance to the place of the physical brain. But so now she's saying, well, if people have neurological problems, does that mean that they can't experience consciousness? No, it just means they experience it differently. But if they come on in, it's okay. They experience it differently. The example when I gave yesterday, and I said, you know, I've got five senses to know you. I've got my eyes, I can see you. I have my ears, I can hear you. I have my hands, I can touch you. I have my nose that could smell you. I have my tongue that could taste you. So I have five ways of knowing you exist. If one of them doesn't work, I'm going to rely on the others. So what we know, not just with regard to consciousness, but with regard to all aspects of life, people who are blind develop incredible senses of hearing and smell. They're much more attuned to sounds and smells than other people are. You enter the room, they know it's you by the sound of your steps versus the sound of someone else's steps. By your smell. Even you've bathed, you're not using perfume, it becomes a heightened sense. And neurologically, literally, those areas take over sight in the brain. So this is what, for me, is so exciting about the brain, is it adapts, it changes. And so if you've got a neurological issue, you're going to move through the world, not just consciousness, differently. You're going to process information differently, depending on what your neurological issue might be. Consciousness is still available to you. As long as your brain is functional and you can access it and you can utilize it, you can evolve spiritually. The point that I was making yesterday was, if you are brain dead, no brain activity whatsoever, the body may be alive, you're still conscious on some level. There's still consciousness in you. The soul is still in you. But you're not able to interact with that consciousness. So if you are brain dead, you're not able to do things like meditate or chant your mantra. Now, what is it like to be brain dead? I have no idea. Is it the best state of meditation that none of us can get to? Maybe. Unfortunately, it's like those questions about life after death. You know, people don't come back to give us the answer. So we don't know. But what we do know is that when you meditate, when you're having deep spiritual experience, we now know neurologically a lot about what that looks like. And it's actually really exciting studies about which parts of the brain are on and off, which parts are heightened. Certain parts are heightened, certain parts are less heightened. But if you've got a neurological issue, you're just going to have a different experience. That evolving consciousness is just going to happen differently for you. In the same way that, you know, people with dyslexia, let's say. Well, they can read. They just read differently. They can see. But certain things happen with letters. That's just different. They have to be taught in a different way. They practice reading in a different way. But they can still read. They can still develop intellectually. You just have to go about it a different way. So yeah, as long as you've got the ability to have an interaction with your own mind and consciousness, whatever that may be, that can keep evolving. As long as there's an aspect of you that is able to look at your consciousness, you can keep evolving. That's what the brain enables us to do, is so I can close my eyes to meditate, let's say, and I'm watching my breath. And while I'm watching my breath and chanting my mantra, a thought comes. Oh my God, I forgot to take the clothes out of the washing machine. Okay. Now my mind is on the washing machine. Okay. And those wet clothes, oh my God, they're going to start to smell. Okay, I've got to remember to get those. Well, I'm then going to bring it back. That's what we do when we meditate. Mind wanders, you bring it back. Well, if my mind has gone to my wash, who noticed that it had wandered? Who brings it back? That ability to look at our mind is us using our brain for consciousness. It's us using the physical brain to interact with consciousness. When I say I'm going to meditate and I'm going to watch my thoughts, well, who's the eye watching my thoughts? I mean, we can talk about witness. That's just a word. Where is that all happening? Well, it's happening in my brain. There's certain drugs you could give me that would render my meditation really different. That would render that experience really different. Now, that being said, we were speaking last night about, you know, chemicals, how they alter our brain. That being said, there are incredible stories of enlightened mystics and saints who have been given very high dosages of very powerful drugs, and it didn't impact them at all. There have been stories about it being given to Yogananda. There have been stories about it given to Neem Karoli Baba, and they just, nothing. So there is actually a state that you can get to where it doesn't impact, but that's a different story. So a neurologic issue does not mean you cannot expand your consciousness. You absolutely can. Depending on what the issue is, you just may have to go in a different way. Like people who are dyslexic go into reading in a different way. They go into learning in a different way. People who are blind interact with the world in a different way. Heightened sense of smell, heightened sense of touch, of hearing. Just different.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Join us here on the holy banks of Mother Ganga, in the lap of the towering and beautiful Himalayas, for our annual International Yoga Festival, taking place from March 1st to March 7th every year. Come join your global yoga family in a true union of yourself with your divine self. We look forward to welcoming you all. You can go to the website on www.internationalyogafestival.org. Look forward to welcoming you all home to the banks of Mother Ganga.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, How do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Mike Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. We speak so frequently that the times most of us go to God are when we want something. Something bad has happened, we pray to God to fix it or at least not to make it worse. So she said, well, the rest of the time, do you pray just for gratitude? And love. You know, the song that Pooja Swamiji sings every night in the Aarti, the refrain says, the highest form of love is love for God. And so ultimately, that's really the goal. And when you love someone, it's not that you never ask something from them. You know, I mean, sometimes you're sick in bed and you say, oh, honey, would you mind bringing me a cup of tea? It's not that there's something inherently wrong with asking something of someone you love. There's also something beautiful in a way of a sense of entitlement of, yeah, God is mine. Right? I mean, God is there for me. The same way that if you were sick in bed and you said to a loved one, would you mind bringing me a cup of tea? You know that they would. But that's because you've got a relationship of love. If you put an ad in the paper and said, you know, looking for someone to just bring me tea in bed for free, there wouldn't be a lot of people who would sign up. There's a relationship that gets built. In that love, you naturally, you serve. So asking is not the problem. It's not that you should never ask something from God. It's that that's not the highest place. Getting a cup of tea from your loved one is not your highest moment of connection. If you were looking back on your decades of a relationship of what were the deepest moments, probably getting a cup of tea in bed when you were sick was not one of them. It was an aside. So in the same way with God, that love of God, love with God, is the goal. And this is where the practices of devotion, you know, practices of bhakti yoga are so important, is really to cultivate that love. But what I have found personally, coming not from a Hindu tradition, on a personal level, that it's easier for me to get into loving God through loving at all. And recognizing that which I am loving or that whom I am loving is God, or that which I'm loving in that being is God, that for me has taken me much faster and easier into a love of God than sitting in front of a deity or performing puja or chanting or just on a personal level. I recognized very early that all the love I felt was actually loving God. And that if I got deep enough in all of my love, whether it was loving the trees as I lay in the pine needles and looked up at them, whether it was loving the people in my life, whether it was loving my life, whether it was loving life in general, whether it was loving the little kids walking along the mountainous roads at, 6 o'clock in the morning, walking kilometers to go to school, but with little bows in their hair. I mean, just the littlest things that filled me with such joy. That for me was such an easy way in. This is so beautiful. Look at these children. Look at what a beautiful creation. They have nothing. But every day, there's bows in the hair. Beautiful braids, beautiful bows, freshly pressed uniforms. Because there's a joy in having the opportunity to go to school. Whereas I had grown up with so much privilege that we took it all for granted. I mean, in my school, the goal was always who could look like they literally had just rolled out of bed and into first class. I mean, sort of you won if you looked like you had had the least amount of time between being in bed and sitting in your desk. So pajamas, dad's boxer shorts, unbrushed hair, I mean, the whole thing. And just the sight of these lines of kids with oiled and braided and bowed hair just filled me from the beginning with such joy and such love. And it was so clear to me that what I was loving in all of the aspects of creation, I didn't know these kids. What I was loving in every aspect, in all the women, in all the people, was God. And so the point of all of that is use whatever gets you there. Whatever you can feel love for, whatever you can feel deep gratitude for, it may be a glass of water. Allow yourself to get a little bit thirstier than you usually do. You know, don't dehydrate yourself completely, but just don't drink immediately. Give it an extra half an hour, 45 minutes. And then just sit, what does water taste? Wow. Thank you. When you walk out of your room in the morning, just like watch the sun as it rises over the mountains. Like, wow. So beautiful. Another day. Another day. And regardless of what a mess we've made of every single day that we may have been given up until this one, it doesn't matter. Because look, we get another one. I mean, what an amazing, amazing creator, whatever your religion is, who just keeps saying, okay, have another, have another. You know, we were talking the other night about kids throwing peas off their high chairs onto the ground and making mom, pick them up. Well, every human mom at some point is going to say, okay, peas are over. Right? You've had 10 opportunities to eat them. You've thrown them on the floor 10 out of 10 times. Peas are over. But look, God, every day, a new opportunity. Every day, another chance. A new rising sun. A new body, a fresh start. The leaves are there, the trees are there, the fruit's there, the sun's there, the water's there. And if any part of it you can feel grateful for, if any part of it you can love, you're there. And just keep tapping into that find things every day to love. Something every day. There was a speaker I heard at a conference I was at a few months ago who had been a National Geographic photographer for his whole life and now had retired. And he gave the most beautiful talk full of photographs about celebrate what's right. Now for him, he did it through photography. It's actually a TED talk I would recommend everybody watch. His name was DeWitt something. But if you search for DeWitt National Geographic celebrate, you'll find it. You'll find it. Some of the best 18 minutes you'll spend. And the reason is he takes you through the fields we walk through every day, the things we see every day, and how his mission was how he could use his camera to just celebrate what was right. And I mean, I sobbed through his entire speech, just sobbed, because every slide was another reminder of just how amazing the creation is. And so if it's not a person, but it's a sunflower, it's a tree, it's a sunrise, it's a sunset, just find things that make you feel grateful, that make you feel connected to the universe. And the minute you find it, sit there. Sit there. Nothing is more important in that moment than experiencing that moment as fully, as deeply, and for as long as you can hold it. Smell the moment. Taste the moment. Hear the moment. Take it in on every level. And that'll bring you into a relationship with God where, yeah, when things are needed, you won't hesitate to ask. But you'll already have the most important thing, which is God's presence. It's like if your loved one said, "No, I don't feel like bringing you a cup of tea." Well, all right, you'd be slightly annoyed, but you'd have something much more important than the tea, which was the relationship. And if your choice were someone from the classified ads who you didn't know who would bring you a cup of tea versus a relationship of love, even though for whatever reason it didn't include tea in bed, you'd always choose that. And so in the same way, what we end up with is a relationship with God that's more beneficial and more important and more fulfilling than anything we could even imagine ever asking for.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization. Their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. Our sixth sense, those of you who didn't hear the question, we had been speaking the other day about interacting with our mind, with consciousness, through our brain, and interacting with the world through our five senses. And she said, well, what about our sixth sense? Our sixth sense being the bucket term for everything that isn't one of the five senses. So there isn't, I wouldn't say one sixth sense. I would say there's a whole bucket that we call intuition, into which so much goes. And yeah, that not only exists, but it's a very, very, very powerful way of knowing. The problem is most of us don't trust it. And so for most people, if it's not something that I know through my five senses, we tend not to believe it. So if I can't see you because I'm blind or my eyes are closed and I can't hear you and I can't feel you or touch you or taste you, my brain says you don't exist. Now, I may have an intuition that says, ah, someone is there. But very few of us listen to that intuition. And that's actually a great tragedy. One of the things that we know is that our intuition is actually that which leads us so frequently in the right direction. When we realize it's intuition, a lot of times we will call our fear or our desire or our ego intuition. Well, you know, my intuition says I really shouldn't go for this job interview, or my intuition says I really shouldn't get out on that stage. My intuition says I shouldn't go to this place or meet these people. And really it's, in most cases, fear. So you just have to be careful that we're not calling intuition something that's just pre-programmed self-doubt. My intuition says I'm going to fail the exam, so I'm not even going to take it. My intuition says I'm not smart enough to be a doctor, so I'm not even going to apply for medical school. Okay, that's not intuition. That's programmed self-doubt. Intuition is that which speaks to you clearly. It's that which you know to be true, even though the mind that you usually use tells you it's not true. So the mind that you usually use will say, you're not smart enough to be a doctor. You're really bad at math. You're bad at science. You know, you should go in a different path. But the intuition is actually the one that's going to say, no, I know this is what I'm supposed to do. Yeah, I failed every biology exam I've ever taken. Nonetheless, I know. I know I'm meant to be a doctor. How you're going to make it happen, I have no idea. But intuition always leads us into the right place. Now, the only important caveat with that is it doesn't always mean success. And so you have to understand what is intuition's highest goal. Intuition's highest goal is your awakening, your unfolding, your developing, not your making $1 billion. intuition has a much higher goal in mind. And so intuition may send you somewhere that looks like it was a failure. Oh my God, my intuition said, you know, I should go pre-med, and here I am again failing every single biology exam. And, well, intuition doesn't guarantee success. It guarantees the right path for you. Maybe in the midst of one of those miserable biology classes that you're going to fail the exam anyway, you found yourself sitting next to someone with whom you fell in love and got married, and it was, you know, your soulmate. Or you met someone who later introduced you to a person or a job or a place to live or a guru or whatever it was. And actually, the intuition about being in the class had nothing to do with biology and everything to do with the fact that you needed to stay in it long enough to sit next to this person, because that's actually what it was all about. And then, of course, you're free to, you know, go and become an English major or a psychology major, whatever it was, because the point of that is now over. But if you had allowed your self-doubt to prevent you from following the intuition when it was there, you would have missed the whole reason that you were being sent into those classes. That the universe had a plan in mind. There was a purpose. Again, not that you're going to be a billionaire doctor. Not that somehow the, you know, wizard of biology is going to be channeled into you and suddenly you're going to be the best student in the class. But there was an entirely different purpose. So we never know. Intuition is different from clairvoyance. It doesn't, you don't know where it's going to go. Intuition is almost always in the moment. It's not so much this long term, like 40 years from now, here's what I know. Intuition is a very felt sense, which is why it's so frequently referred to as our sixth sense. It's not contemplation, which is also great, it's just different. It's not introspection, which is also great, but different. It's that literal sense in the being of do this, don't do that. Go here, don't go there. It's that. And if we can learn to really hear it, because it's very different from impulse. Impulse has a frenetic energy to it. Gotta do it, gotta do it, gotta do it, gotta do it. Impulse has that. Want to do it. Intuition is much, much clearer, much more stable. And it's just there. That doesn't mean it doesn't come with a boom. You know, a man I know well actually has just done a movie on intuition. And he did the movie because his personal experience with it was an immediate instinct when he was driving down the road that said, slow down. No reason to slow down. It was a wide open road in the, you know, early hours of the morning. He was going the speed limit, but somehow this intuition, slow down immediately. He had nothing but green lights and open road up ahead, but he did. And coming in the other direction, this huge bus or truck or something ran a red light straight into the intersection. And if he had kept going at the normal speed, he would have been there and been hit. So it sometimes comes in with a boom. It's not that it's quiet. It's just not frenetic. It doesn't have fear. It doesn't have desire. It's just a sense of knowing. So yes, our our sixth sense is very important. It's not so much how we know the world, though. The five senses are usually how we interact with the world. Intuition sometimes includes that, but a lot more it has to do with knowing something about yourself. So intuition is not so much about knowing that you exist by sight or sound or taste or smell, but intuition is much more about me. So that's where there's a slight difference. But yeah, the more you can use intuition, the better. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.